Hi, and welcome back to the Brand Telling Podcast. I'm Arthur Germain, your host and principal and chief brand teller at Brand Telling. And with me today is a special guest, Rob Carbone of Rob Carbone VoiceOver. Rob, thank you very much for joining me on the Brand Telling Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So Rob and I know one another. We actually, we went to the same college. That's the CMP College of here on Long Island. We both worked at CMP Media back in the day, and we've also crossed paths in a couple of areas. And as we've gone through different things, one area that Rob has really taken hold of and excelled at is around podcasting, video casting, and voiceovers. And so I'm really pleased to have you here today to really kind of explore what it is that a voiceover or VO artist does in his day, and really something that you brought up when you and I talked about this, the importance of the voice of the brand, and I think that's really a great topic. So let me start with asking you, what does a VO artist do in his day?
So first thing most people don't understand about voiceover is that if you tell them that there's voiceover being done, their automatic first thoughts are going to animation, video games, TV commercials, radio commercials. I myself do a lot of e-learning. So, and with the pandemic, that area really exploded. So, when you're doing your e-learning projects at work, where you're going through all of these classes, that's a voiceover person that's doing that. And what ends up happening is a normal day in a voiceover, like for normal day for me, I work with a company located in India, and they want a one-day turnaround. So I will get scripts usually sometime after midnight in my email, because that's 9 a.m. for them. Wake up in the morning, look at the scripts, see what they're looking for. They might give me a sample that I had recorded previously, that's what the client is looking for in terms of tone and delivery. And then it's go through the script, put in edits so that when you're talking, it doesn't sound like you're just reading a script. So you're putting in pauses, you're highlighting certain words that you can add color to. You're highlighting certain phrases. You're making sure that if it's a very technical read, that you understand how to say the words, that if there's a brand name in it or a product name in it, that when you say it, you're saying it as an emphasized single comment or statement in the middle of a sentence. Once that's all done, you get into your recording studio. Used to be a time when voiceover people would go into studios, professional studios, like a radio station or something like that. With the pandemic and even beginning before that, it became something that voiceover people were doing at home. So as you can see, I am sitting inside of a portable recording booth that I use. And the goal of that is to tamp down any external noises, because you want to, when you record, you want to make sure that there is a, I'm going to take my glasses off, they're distracting, sorry. You want to make sure that there is a maintainable sound floor, so that when it's being used, the engineers are not dealing with a lot of scratches and beeps and breaths and all of that. And anybody who lives on Long Island, if you're within a mile of a train, you're going to hear that in the background. You're going to hear traffic. I happen to be in the flight path of Republic Airport, and it's a lot of people don't know that's the fourth busiest airport in the tri-state area. A lot of small plane traffic. They come in low, and those things can be loud. And then once you do the recording, in fact, if you listen right now, I think that's on my end, landscapers. So you're dealing with that. Once that's done, depending on who you're working with, you either send them the raw file, or in the case of the client I work with, I do some cleaning up before they get it, because they're dropping it into a video and they might be using background music or other things like that. So I clean it up and make sure that there's no very peaky points where my voice is going really high or really low. I'm taking out sibilants. And for people who don't know what the term sibilance means, it means when you say something with an S, it either sounds like so or so. When you drag it out, that's sibilance, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I have a sibilant S. I can't help it, but that's I know exactly what you're talking about.
And you want to know what's funny is? You know how you cure the sibilant S? Practice saying S's with a cork in your mouth. Drink the wine first, but put the cork in your mouth.
That's good. I'll start with the wine drinking, but yeah, I like that idea.
And then it's, you know, you finalize the file, you send it over, and the contract, the voiceover and customer contract is usually very weighted with, okay, we're going to ask you to do re-records because they're going to check. You may miss a word, especially if you're doing long scripts. When I first started doing this, I was doing a lot of K through 12 education. And I was getting scripts that were 30 pages long. And some of them had parts that ran on for four or five paragraphs over two or three pages. And you will miss words. You'll mispronounce words. The other part for me, and this is true for any voiceover, wherever they're located, is, you know, in the United States here, big country, a lot of regional accents. I happen to have a very New York accent. And I had to train to tamp that down to a more generic American accent. I may get somebody who wants me to do a very New York accent. But mostly for companies, especially larger companies, they want a neutral accent that is not going to make the user feel out of place, I guess. And then it's, you know, that's the process. Get up for me, get up in the morning, get the scripts, record the scripts. I usually do my recording in the evening when it's a lot quieter in the neighborhood, and then process the files and then send them on their merry way and wait to see if there's corrections. And that's with e-learning. You could be doing promotional stuff, and they want that turned around really quick, but those are much shorter scripts. So it really, depending on who the VO is and what genre they're working in, their day is pretty much the same. It's almost like the old marketing 80-20 mix. 80% of marketing is the same company to company to company. The 20% is the adjustments you make because of the product and the target market.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I appreciate you walking us through. I think the idea of a process is something that people may not know. And everyone's watching, you know, they watch their TikTok and say, oh, don't I just hit record and it's done, and like, well, no. I mean, there's so much in there that you walked through, and you know, as I'm looking at you in the sound booth where you are, I'm remembering back to being in college where we had you know, the big foam fingers on the wall to absorb the sound a little bit and everything. You know, the room might have been 8 feet wide, but not when the foam fingers were on it. It suddenly was about 6 feet wide. And it didn't do as good a job as what you've got there, a more industrial type of recording. When you're working with a client, is there a top thing that you try to keep in mind about either who you're recording this for or who the listener is? Is there something that you're really always trying to keep kind of, you know, top of mind as you do that?
I mean, when it comes to doing voiceover, there are a number of different factors that the voiceover artist, voiceover performer, I'm just going to call me a VO because that's what we call ourselves, has to take into consideration. So it's who is the audience, what the client wants as far as their optimal delivery and tone, what accent you're using. So again, generic American accent is what most people want. But I might get somebody who wants me to do a New York accent, which I'm quite capable of doing.
Especially in like commercial work or something like that, right?
Yeah. And when you're doing, well, I mean, really with commercial work, with e-learning, when it's something that's not targeting a specific geographic area, they want more generic. Right. Case in point, one of my first jobs that I got was, and there I just did my New York, I said jobs instead of jobs. was for Temple University's Office of Continuing Education. They were doing a project for the Pennsylvania sheriffs and deputies and constables. And I told them, I said, well, I was talking to the girl on the phone, and I said, you know, I know you're hearing my New York accent now. I can do more generic American. And she said, no, we don't mind the New York accent because we're Pennsylvania. We get the New York accent. And more of a Northeast accent. So that wasn't the problem. The other thing to be aware of is, and this is almost like, it's one of those areas that you have to tread lightly as a VO. And for me, because my background, you know, you mentioned we've crossed paths in the marketing world over the years. A lot of what I did before I ventured into VO, I did a lot of writing. So I have the editor, writer mindset when I'm looking at something. And a lot of times you will get scripts that are written, there's that sibilance, and you could tell the person wrote it as if it was like a robot saying it. I just did one today. Hello, I am Michael. Now, most normal people would say, hi, hello, I'm Michael, and combine those two. Makes it a smoother flowing word, smoother flowing line. They very much wanted, I am Michael. So you know, you sort of make suggestions if you think you can do it. I just recently did for the second time on hold messaging for a local company here on Long Island, Huga, and they sent me their script, and I tweaked it a little because there was lines that were a little bit too long because of the wording they used, or they had one big long run on sentence. They appreciated that I did that, and they liked it, and that was good. So when you're a VO, you also have to know not only the audience of who is going to be the final consumer of what you're recording, but also who you're working with, because there are people who are very set in their ways and they believe the script they wrote is perfect. And you almost have to learn to take a step back and say, I am being paid to produce this product for them to use the way they want it read, and I'm going to do that. And then disassociate yourself from it in that, you know, it's like, okay, I've created it. They're happy with it. They've compensated me. How they use it, whether or not it's successful, is not on me anymore because I gave them exactly what they wanted in the best way possible. And that's one of the stumbling blocks of being a VO is that you'll read it and you'll hear it. And you can already tell this doesn't sound like a natural flow. It's too wordy. There are words that can be combined, but they don't want that. And you have to remember, as a service provider, you provide the service the way the customer wants it. And go from there. So
Yeah,
that's
I think
there's a
that's
lot that you
familiar
have to think
to,
about as you're doing
yeah,
it.
I think that's familiar to a lot of folks and people in my audience who are marketers who are doing that. In the back of my head, as you're talking, I'm thinking about my designer friends who have all heard, could you make the logo a little bigger, or could you make that logo a little more blue? And yeah, they can make it bigger, they can make it blue. That might not have been their recommendation. I say lots of times as a marketer and as a former PR person, I spent time either talking clients off the ledge or telling them to jump. You know that that they had to take a hey, listen, jump with me, take this jump, take this leap of faith, or you know, let's back off a little bit. That's not the way we want to go. So I do get that, and I do think though that the one thing you said that really resonates for me is. It's not always for the specific consumer who purchased it from you, but it's for their consumer. That's the thing that I think is important in a lot of marketing. It's not for the marketer, but it's for the people they market to. So, you know, are you going to be talking to a CIO, or are you doing this for the VP marketing that hired you to record it? You're doing it for the CEO, you know, that they sell to. So knowing who that end person is important.
And that's interesting that you bring that up because it's when I was fully in marketing, when I was doing writing, when you're doing something creative, you have to be, or anything really, where you're going through a process and you're looking to create a specific outcome, a specific product, there are blind spots. So I knew I was a good writer. My blind spot there was I would sometimes get lost in the words I was using. I went from being the marketing writer to thinking I was somewhere between Hemingway and Shakespeare, where I was getting too flowery with my terms. Didn't need a lot of that. I also had
You're
the
not the
blind,
only one, Rob.
and there was that other blind spot of not always seeing the errors because I know what I meant to write, and as I'm reading it, you're going fast. One of the greatest editing tools I ever learned as a writer was read it backwards the first time. Then you'll find spelling errors. And it reminds me of my daughter and I are big fans of watching Gordon Ramsay's cooking shows. And one of the things he always tells people, these cooks, is, you're a good cook, but you need to learn to edit yourself. So if you think 15 ingredients is going to be perfect, that's fine. But the first time you taste it, find those things that aren't really necessary or overpowering the more important flavors and edit those out. And I think that is a universal problem for anybody creative, especially in marketing, is what you said, which is people get lost in the who the ultimate consumer is of what's being produced. I've seen it with graphic designers, I've seen it with marketing managers, I've seen it with website designers, all of us. I've seen it with VO script writers.
Yeah,
They're thinking
I
in terms
agree
of themselves.
completely. I agree completely. One of the things that I've heard when I've talked with folks is somebody at Rich Isaacs over at Sandler says that everyone's got a radio station playing in the back of their head. It's called it's a WIIFM, which is What's in It for Me. And they're always wondering, so what's the relevant part? And hitting that relevant part and sticking to that relevant part is really tough. Like you said, sometimes I love a good twist of a phrase. I'm like, oh, I'm proud of myself. Let me pat myself on the back. This is great. I love alliteration, for example.
Yes.
But it may not be what what that end customer needs. And that's where, I think the marketing, our client, our direct client, really adds that value because they know, because they're right there on the front lines. They know, yeah, that's a great phrase. Nobody's going to understand that. Great. Okay, we won't use that. And I think the best things are always a collaboration. Where I've had a client write something, and before I've sent it for a VO, I've gone back. I'll record a scratch mix myself and say, listen to me read that. What do you think? Yeah, that whole center part we got lost in. Okay, let's change it before we send it for a professional VO to do it. And sometimes I think that's a that helps a lot, just to do a kind of a scratch mix, if you will,
Oh yeah, absolutely.
before sending it off. I think that's great. So I want to kind of segue a little bit and talk about the voice of the brand, because I think that's what we're talking about here a lot. And you've mentioned this to me before, the idea that as a VR, you are in fact the voice of the brand. You are representing the brand in a way that they are now going to hear that. So if you're doing an educational piece, when somebody's listening, when they're working with that product, it's your voice in their head now. You're the voice of the brand that they get to hear. Tell me a little bit about that and what that means for you.
See, so being the voice of a brand, and I think it taking it back a step, is that every brand, every company, and even if it's a big company, they may have separate different product lines. All of them will have their own separate voices. And I mean, and by that I mean that they are speaking to a specific audience, and they have to, and once they understand that audience, they know how to speak to that audience. As the voiceover professional or the VO, you have to, when you talk to a client, you have to almost find that out as soon as possible and as easily as possible. What is the voice of your brand? Is it authoritative? Is it Very relaxed? Is it, you know, personable? Whatever any of those are. And you have to assume that characteristic in the way you deliver it. And being the voice of a brand, it's like, in terms of branding, you want a consistent message across your branding. So the logos you use, the colors you use, the fonts you use, whether it's your website, your emails, your social media, your handouts at events, videos you put up on YouTube, whatever it is, you want that branding to be consistent, because that's how the brand becomes memorable. I was thinking about this in terms of, because I do a podcast for voiceover people who don't understand marketing, or don't know it that well. And my next episode is going to be about branding. And I was thinking in terms of branding. Okay, well, what would most people think if you said branding? And there might be some people who say, well, branding is what a cattle rancher does to his cow. And I said, well, that's basically what creating a logo and creating a look and a feel to a brand is. You're creating a mark that's going to become memorable, that's going to tell people, this is mine. This is who I am. And then the story you tell behind it is what adds authenticity, what adds value, and what adds confidence when talking to the customer or the client or the prospect, whatever you want to call it, the target market. To be the voice of that means that you are now going to be a part of creating that image, that character, that presence that the end users are going to hear. And when you're a company that's trying to develop that brand voice, whether it's print, whether it's digital or voice or video, you want to make sure that it's something consistent and repeatable across the board. And even in the case of brands that might use multiple voices, you want to make sure that all of those voices, they're going to be different. Some might be male, some might be female, some might be whatever gender, whatever you want to talk about. But you want to make sure that you're getting the same delivery, where if the brand's persona, if you will, is confident, authoritative, and personable, that all of those people who are doing the voicing for you can replicate that feel in their voice. Just as your graphic designers are going to do that, and your website designers, and your people who are going out and staffing your events, everyone has to understand the voice of the brand. As a VO, that's where it's, you have to understand that before you start talking into this thing.
I love that. I mean, I often talk about brand as story. You know that it's more than the logo. We always say that, right? But I think you're even you're making that even broader. You know, the brand as experience. How do you want the brand to be experienced? And that's how should it look? How should it sound? What are the different feelings? Is it a friendly, casual brand, or is it going to be a little bit more corporate in its approach? Before we started recording, we were talking about someone we both know and a podcast, and saying, "Boy, this guy's great. He's a very personable in-person guy, but." Something we saw recorded made him look a little bit more corporate. We just thought it seemed a little off brand for him. I think that's often a case. I've seen people where I go, boy, that's good, but it seems off brand. And I think now what I'm connecting with that from what you've said is that seeming off brand is it doesn't sound like them. It may not look like them or whatever, but it just doesn't sound like them, or like the way I have the brand in my head. So I thank you for that idea of experience, of how do you experience a brand? And I agree with you. It is the thing that I think is always important is it consistent and is it compelling? It's trade show season here, and I went to a trade show, and sure enough, somebody hands me a business card, and I look at it and I go, huh. And I look up at the booth and I look at the business card and it looks different. And the sales guy says, oh yeah, we just got a new logo, but I have like 500 cards to give out. And I'm like, you know, right there and then you're going to destroy everything by handing out 500 business cards that don't look anything like the brand new logo, right? That lacks the consistency. And no matter what, you know, your marketing guy is saying, the couple of bucks he spent on those cards, toss them away, get new cards. So,
and you know, what's funny is we were, when I was going over in my mind things that, I hope we were going to discuss during this. One of the things that you and I discussed before this is, you know, hiring a VO as opposed to using someone internal, or worst case scenario is there's now the propagation of AI voiceover. Yeah.
Right.
And to that point with the business cards, I've got 500 of these business cards. I'm going to keep using them. I was doing some work with a local company here, right at the start of the pandemic, and they had brochures they were handing out, and not, there were like three or four offers on there that didn't make sense.
Right.
And I was told, well, you know, we had 1,000 of them printed up. And I just was like, well, why are you still using them if they don't? Well, we spent money on them.
Right.
And there's so many things that when you see that in marketing, we spent money on it. We have to use it all. No, at a certain point, you've got to know when to stop.
Right.
And that goes to the other part of brand, of a brand's voice, is authenticity. If you look at a company and you see their messaging, and you're a knowledgeable consumer, not maybe in every specific product area and industry, but if you're a knowledgeable consumer, I believe that you can look at a company, and if you hear something from them or see something and you do a little research, you'll be able to tell if it's authentic or not.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, is a brand has to sound, the voice of the brand has to sound authentic, has to. And because if you don't have that, you've just put yourself, you know, it's the one step forward, two steps back. If you don't sound authentic, it's one step forward and you've just moved back, not one step, but one day, one week, one month.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what we're seeing a lot of today is, people will say that a brand has washed itself, whether it's greenwashing or pride washing or something, where they're just, you know, taking on the flavor of what happens to be going on in a given month and saying, oh, we do that. And it's really evident really fast if a brand doesn't really live through that promise. And so I completely agree with you. The authenticity has to be there. You know, just saying you do a thing is not doing a thing. So that's tough. Hey, Rob, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, let me ask you, you know, I have here your website. Tell me a little bit, how can people get here? Tell me about your website and how they can contact you.
I mean, the website, it's basically a, you know what, it's a brochure website. It basically, it's just for people to find out more about me. On there, they can hear my demos. They can hear some recordings I've done. They can go through to my various social media platforms. They can absolutely go onto the website, and there's a form on there they can fill out. They can, is there a form on there? I think there is. I've been working on the website.
Phone's right there. Yep.
That right there that you're seeing, that isn't a form. That's actually that's a very cool app that was created about a year and a half ago called VoiceZam. And that lets you load up your demo, which is usually five or six different recordings.
Oh, that's great.
And this lets you listen to each one separately rather than listening to them in a loop. And you can add to it. It's a great tool for voiceover people. But there's my email address, which is rob@robcarbonevo. And if you go on to LinkedIn, I have a company page there, which is Rob Carbone Voiceover. I'm the most active of all my social media on Instagram. And it's one of the things that baffles me about the VO community is they are very active on Facebook, and a lot of them are on Twitter, and some of them are doing Instagram, and some of them are doing TikTok. But if you're trying to be hired by a business, why you wouldn't be as active and visible on LinkedIn? And a lot of them don't put the two together. And I think there's a new utility in LinkedIn that I just found out about that I think is amazing, that if you have a company page, as long as your company page is linked to your website and your website has a privacy disclaimer page, you can put up a form on your LinkedIn company page to prospect on LinkedIn. So if someone
That's
comes
great.
to your LinkedIn company page, oh, I'm going to fill out this prospect form and it's going to come to you. And all you need to do is have that one page on your website, which is common page privacy. But those are the best ways to reach me. And like I said, I do e-learning. I've done on-hold messaging. I've done some promo work in the past. And you know, I really, the only area I would say in the VO world that I don't get into and I'm trying to work into is doing animation and video game voicing. But that's a different world where your voice is going to be different every time you do something.
Right.
But when you're, you know, like I said, IVR, on-hold messaging, explainer videos, corporate narrations, even I did about a year ago, oddly enough, one of the funniest things I ever did, I was contacted by a charity in Israel, and all they wanted me to do was say the company name and then do that let's get ready to rumble like Michael Buffer in the boxing
Yeah.
matches.
Yep.
And what was so bizarre about it was, okay, I could do it. Let's get ready to rumble. I had to say the name of the charity beforehand, and it was an Israeli name. So I had to go from sounding almost very like, I think it was Shabbat Al-Ronit, and then do the Michael Buffer thing. And it was just weird. And they actually shot, they sent me a live video of the event they played it at. And, you know, people were applauding and laughing, and I was like, wow, that's what it sounded like. Oh
That's
my God.
great. That's great.
But yeah, and along with the voiceover, one of the other things that I do offer is I do script writing, I do script editing, and I can also, you know, if you're not familiar with the voiceover community, and going out and finding VOs is sometimes it can be a minefield because there are websites that will tell you these are great people and they're not. If you're looking for a specific voice or a specific accent or anything like that, I have a pretty solid network. So if I'm not the voice for you, I can definitely recommend you on to someone else who will be that voice for you.
Yeah, no, I
So.
think that's fantastic, and you know, I often do the same when if I'm not a fit, I let me find someone who is. I'm just for everybody. I'm just going to put your website address back up there again, Rob Carbone, VO, so that you know that's the shortened voiceover for your company name to get to you. And Rob, again, I want to thank you so much. This has been really great and really informative, and I appreciate it. And hey, let's get some stuff done together. Let's get ready to rumble, Rob.
Absolutely. I am here waving inside of my cloth tent, ready to go. So,
Thanks very much.
thank you for having me on. This has been a great pleasure for me, and I'm glad that I was able to share more about what the VO world is about with your viewers.